Hello, and welcome to episode 140 of Just Keep Writing,
a podcast for writers by writers
to keep you writing.
I'm Marshall.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Will.
And joining us this week to talk about writing and her novel Calamity is our awesome, awesome friend, Constance Fay. Welcome to the show. It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you guys too, to see and hear.
Yes, we had some visual problems earlier and I'm glad those are solved because now we can all smile at each other and be excited. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. So we have known you for some time now and we are so stoked to have you on the show and to talk about your work and what you've got going on and your writing journey and all of that. But before we get into that, I don't know, just tell us a little bit about yourself for the people that don't know you.
Oh, gosh. Okay. My name is Constance Fay. My first novel, Calamity, released in November of 2023. And I've been writing before that for many, many, tens of many of years. And I met some of these guys on the Writing Excuses Cruise in 2018, which was the only one I attended, but it was impactful enough that it made a huge difference. And I've been writing for a very, very long time. I started taking it seriously in 2018, and it's been a long time coming, but it got me to my first traditionally published novel last year, which was very exciting.
Oh, we're stoked. And like, I loved meeting you in 2018. It was awesome. And we've seen each other since then, obviously, you know, virtually and stuff and writing excuses, things. But what I love is that I was actually trying to remember if you had gone on 2019, but 2018 was the only time you had gone, huh?
Yeah. Yep. That was
That was a big one. That was when I met Nick, of course, too. And it was just, it was a really quite a magical time. So anyway, I'm going to pass it over to Nick, before I go down reminiscing too much, but go ahead.
Well, I'm gonna reminisce myself. Constance is a day one listener, like OG listener from the very beginning, and it's kind of crazy.
Marshall,
yeah,
and we started
she really stuck in with you guys.
It was damn near unlistenable at that point.
Oh, we were just two people being like, hey, I heard this piece of advice. Let's talk about it for an hour. Y'all are still here. Constance is still here. I think, you know, hearing it perspective, right? Like, you took writing seriously in 2018 and you're working on, like, you had a first published novel last year. And it's like, oh, that's like my time frame too. Like, so there's like hope for me right now. All right. You know, it's around the corner, hopefully. But thanks for coming on. I mean, this is, we've been tracking this book for a little while, trying to schedule time with you. And it just so happens this release in November on the 23rd, if I remember right.
14th. So close.
14th. See, I didn't remember right. So we've been trying to get with you and schedule some time with you to chat about this. But kind of, you know, Will's going to jump in here in a minute to do our first segment here. But I'm excited that you're here and that we're going to be able to talk about this. This is a big journey, a big step. And so congratulations on your first traditional published book, too.
We're all out of applause from the group.
The applause. Keep that coming. I was a day one listener. And I really actually, I have enjoyed the podcast in all of its iterations as it's grown and matured, you know, along with the rest of us. And so it's nice looking at where it came from to where it is now. And not to say where it came from is not good, but where it is now is certainly matured.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say.
Oh, she's so nice. You guys paid her. All right, Constance. So this is how, you know, I was thinking we could go about. We're going to do our traditional question. But also, I think, in the interview, because this is your first, I'd really also, and I'm sure Nick has these questions as well, to really talk about like your beginnings and then like getting an agent, querying, landing that deal. And then we're going to talk about the book, of course. Mm-hmm. So I want to know in three words, which could be totally unconnected, tell us, in three words about your writing journey, just overall.
Oh, gosh. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a listener of this podcast, which means I knew this question was coming, which means I'm prepared. And because of that,
that's two guests in a row that have been prepared.
I stuck myself in a format that I shouldn't have done because I came up with two words that started with F. And then I'm like, the third word has to start with F. So I really kind of shoehorned that one in there. But the three words I think apply to the writing of Calamity are fun, fast, and formidable. You can guess which one the third one was.
I love it. So let's unpack them. What about fun?
All right. Fun was, you know, I've written a number of books before this one. So Calamity was by no means my first book. But I've always struggled with the statement that they tell you on, you know, writing activities and workshops and that sort of thing. They always say things like, write the book that only you can write. You know, write the story that is special to you. And I'd often look at myself and be like, well, I'm not all that special in the ways that we talk about for book writing. I mean, I'm a cisgender straight white girl, and my background is sort of an Irish Scandinavian sort of thing. So if we're talking fantasy, that's a fantasy that has been done and done and done and done. So if I'm going back into my sort of cultural background, there's nothing there that hasn't been done before by a lot of other people. If we're talking about my personal experiences, I'm kind of boring. So I struggled with coming up with a book that was mine to write. And I think in a lot of my earlier books that I wrote, I was trying on things that weren't necessarily unique to me or special to me. They were things that I was like, I could speak to this because I've got an angle. But I was kind of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, for want of a better term. And with Calamity, I just decided to write a book that was fun. I grew up in the Southwest, and I like the idea of a Western without the, let's say, cultural complexities that have happened with a lot of the historical Westerns. So I didn't want to have any of that. But I like the idea of exploring new frontiers and with a sort of desert ambiance to that, with the idea of standoffs and shootouts and that sort of thing. And that very much goes into my family's background and my family history. Not that we have a lot of shootouts, but that we definitely are a sort of Western family, and that my dad grew up on a cattle ranch for most of the time. And so we have a lot of that in there. And I grew up on sort of old-fashioned adventure stories. So when it came time to write something, I wanted to write an adventure story with a female protagonist who was not the sort of air quotes strong female character who is, but is very flawed and actually gets to be funny. Because generally, women in stories usually have to play sort of the straight man. They're the unfunny one, and there's usually a guy that has funny moments. And not obviously not in all stories. There's plenty of stories with funny women, but I really wanted a character that got to be everything, was a fully fleshed out person that was having fun while having a terrible time. And so I wrote a story that was, I think, the book that I could write, but on a more personal level as opposed to an external level. I was looking at external things that were the book that I could write in terms of world building and in terms of that, as opposed to the character that only I could write, the character that kind of speaks to me in a voice that is a voice that is natural to me. And so it was really a fun writing process because it just flowed out. It was almost effortless, the writing of Calamity. Not the editing of Calamity, but the writing of Calamity was almost effortless.
Nice.
I love that. And what about Fast?
That kind of goes into it. I started writing, I saved a specific date. So I started on January 1st, 2022. And like I said, I was obsessed with it. It flowed out of me. I wrote. I would go to bed thinking about the next scene, about what was happening with the characters. It was really, the only thing I can compare it to is when I was writing short stories, I am a planner in my writing process. I plan in great detail. You know, I'm a spreadsheets level planner in terms of writing process planning. But for my short stories, I did not plan like that. My short stories, I just sort of vomited up onto the paper and then put them in order. But they were holistically born. And Calamity, although I planned it, it came out more like the short stories. It came out just sort of like I was expelling something that was already in me. And so I was obsessed with that story and with getting it out there. And so I turned the whole book around in under 3 months, which for me was very, very fast. You know, before that, my books had taken, I think a year was the very fastest one I'd written. And most of them were longer than that.
Damn. Wow, that's amazing. And Formidable.
So Formidable is actually where I start to get into the story of publication as well, because that was the new thing for me, that the story was effortless. It was fun to write. It was great. Everything got out there. And then there was the part where I had to make it real, where it stopped just being this thing that lived in my mind and had to be a good and also marketable story. So it started out, Calamity started out as a science fiction story that had strong romantic elements. And that's what the beta readers first looked at. And that's what I had sort of ready to go when I participated in an auction benefit for the Ukraine. And one of the thing that I was auctioning for was an author, a romance author, Rebecca Zanetti, to look at your first three chapters and to provide feedback on your first three chapters. And so I ended up winning that auction item and I was like, fantastic, but maybe this book should be a romance. If I'm giving it to a romance author, maybe I should have it something that would be more like what she's used to seeing or what she'd want to see. So I did a incredibly fast edit and turned it into more of a romance. And she read the first three chapters. She very, very generously offered to read the rest of the book. And I, of course, took her up on that. That also meant many more edits because I had edited the first three chapters to make it a romance. I had not edited the next, you know, 27. So I made the edits and I moved forward from there.
Nick,
I love go that. Ahead. Nick, do you want to say something?
Oh, I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've always heard the advice, and I want to know what you think of it. Don't change what you're writing and what your book is based on who you're submitting to. Write the book that you want, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, you did not do that. You said, oh, I'm submitting to a romance author. Let me make a romance. And it worked. Do you recommend this? Is this something where you're like, oh, this is something I would do always? Or is this like the one in a million things that it just worked for the story?
I think it's situational. In my case, it worked because it was already very close to being a romance, right? It was pretty balanced. It was, I'd say, you know, 52% sci-fi and 48% romance. And there's people that might argue that that's what it is right now. You know, I've had different reviews about the balance of sci-fi and romance in it. And I would say that a traditional romance, the romance drives the plot. And that's not the case in Calamity. The romance does not drive the plot. There is a strong romance that is alongside the plot. But I think in this case, it was so well balanced. I don't know if it would have made a difference or not. But for me, the sort of business side of it, the marketing side of it, I thought it's so close that this is not changing my vision for the book, right? This is not changing my story, really. This is adding some embellishment on certain sections. So if there had been no romantic elements at all, I think changing it to a romance would have been a bad choice. But because it was so close to being a romance anyway, I think that that didn't hurt. Maybe it helped. I don't know if it helped.
Let's talk about this for a minute. So would you say before you decided to submit to this romance author, did you see yourself as your vision of like, I'm going to come out with my first release and it's definitely going to be like science fiction or fantasy? Or were you always like, oh, maybe I would have a romance book? Like, what was your journey?
Yeah, well, I think that goes with the write the book only you can write thing that I also wasn't looking at, because I read romance voraciously. I really enjoy romance. I read a lot of romance. I also read a lot of just pure fantasy or pure science fiction. But if I were to, you know, rank the things that I read, romance with science fiction and fantasy elements is probably the highest. And so I think there was always going to be a very strong romantic element to what I write because of that. And I was trying to write more, you know, serious books, I think, in the earlier things that had less of that in it. And this one, I really wasn't going for a, you know, the goal of the book was to be fun. It was to be a good time. And so I might have not, my mom actually had suggested several times that I should write romance. And I was just sort of like, oh, mom, and didn't really think about it until I did it. And I enjoyed it. But I will say that when I get edits, you know, everyone has strengths in their writing, right? They have things that come naturally to them and things that they have to work harder on. And I think for some people, that thing they have to work harder on is like dialogue or it's action sequences. And both of those come fairly easily to me, but romance does not come fairly easily to me. I'm good at sex. I'm good at writing sex scenes. I am less good. I am less good at writing the sort of tenderness, I guess I would say, that comes alongside of that. I'm maybe even good at the buildup. It's the softness of emotion that comes after that usually takes a lot more work for me. So I think that was the biggest learning experience, and that partially goes into that line of formidability, is the learning how to do that better as opposed to just relying on things that came more naturally to me.
Okay, so you write this book, you then decide I'm going to, through the auction, submit it to this romance author. She then says to you, I'll read the whole book for you. You give it to her. And then what happened next?
Well, she gave me some fantastic advice, which I some of it was about editing and some of it was actually about that romantic element. And so at the time there, it was, I'd say, even more balanced than it is now. It's leaned even more romance now. But at the time there was, say, one sex scene and there was a little less lead up to it. And she told me to leave it like that because she said, when you submit, if you get to that point, it's nice to have it there because it shows you can do it. If a sci-fi publisher gets it, they'll just probably take it out. And if a romance publisher gets it, they'll tell you to do more. So I thought that was really great advice for anyone that isn't quite sure what their genre is. You know, if they have mixed elements of both, to keep a little bit in there to show that you can do it, to show that you have a handle on that sort of thing. But it worked for me. So I don't necessarily know if it would work overall. But she gave me some fantastic edits. And then she said that when I was ready to query, she would give a good word for her agent. And so that was fantastic. We all, you know, are waiting for someone to say, I'll tell my agent about you, that thing that makes you a human to an agent instead of a query letter that just comes across their pile day by day. And she did. And I queried in my first round, I think I didn't query that many people. I queried maybe three people. And Caitlin Blaisdell was on that list. And she asked to see the full manuscript and she read it and she offered representation. So that was actually really fast. It happened really quickly. So that happened also in 2022. So I started in January 1st, 2022, and I believe it was in August that Caitlin offered representation. And then she is also a fantastic editor. So she had edits for me to get it into shape to submit to a publisher. So we went through those edits. We finished them up by about the end of the year. And then first thing in 2023, she submitted an exclusive submission to Tor, who, unbeknownst to me, but very beknownst to her, was about to launch Bramble, their romantic subsection. So Bramble was on the market for a debut author as part of their lineup. They have, you know, a fantastic lineup that's, you know, Jennifer Armentrout, Evelyn Maxwell, Olivia Blake were all in the first year, and they were looking for someone new to have on there as well. And so at the end of those 2 weeks, they said, yes, we would like it. And then on Valentine's Day, it was officially announced. And then we started so many more edits. So we started edits. They decided they wanted it on a really fast track schedule. So I think one of the things we all hear about publishing is that once you sign the contract, it still takes so long before the book comes out. And once I signed the contract, it took, because I didn't sign the contract right away. You know, there was still time as everyone was working everything out. But it was, you know, well under a year because my book came out in November of last year. So the edits were all in a very fast turnaround because they had to do all the cover art, cover design, you know, copy editing, all that. So we did, I think it was 2 rounds of edits with the publisher to push it more into a romantic shape again, because it's a romantic subpress of Tor, and also to get it ready for the market. And we, after those rounds of edits, come copy edits where you're looking at, you know, the smaller scale things like, hey, you use 2 words in the same paragraph, you use the same word twice, so you need to cut that out. So all of those kinds of edits. After that comes the first pass edit, which is funny because it's the last pass, but it's called the first pass. And that's in PDF form, so you're seeing how everything looks in sort of the formatting it will be in the original book. And my contract when I signed with them was for 3 books. And the second book was supposed to be, second book, Fiasco, which is coming out this June, on June 4th. It was due last September, the original draft to them. And the third book, Chaos, which is hopefully coming out next winter, so about a year from now, was due the first of this year. So that's where Formidable comes in again, because before, when you're writing on your own free time, it's just sort of la la la, yeah, I'm gonna write a book, it's lovely, it's fine, I've got all the time in the world. You know, even if you're taking it seriously, you don't think about all those things that are happening while you're writing the next book. So you don't think that, oh well, I'm writing book two, I'm gonna be writing the, or, you know, working with them on edits for the official blurb, working on all the rounds of edits with the agents, working on, you know, bumping up a social media presence for when things come out, or articles and essays and interviews around release time. You don't think about all those other non-writing a book things that are still writing a book. And so that's where Formidable comes in as well, because there was a lot of unexpected work in the job of being an author as opposed to the hobby of being a writer.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a pretty quick turnaround for even established, like, yeah, you know, long-term authors. So my question is, like, were you intimidated? Were you like, I'm up for this challenge? Like, what was your headspace at this point?
And did you meet those deadlines? Because that is a, like I've seen that the second book's already, you know, ready to rock, but you just said the third one's already done too. So like, were you able to hit all of those? That's crazy.
Yeah, it was, I would say that I have always had a stupid level of confidence. So when I heard that, I was like, fantastic, great. This will be no problem at all. I've got it. And I did get it. You know, I turned in everything on time. We're working it around. So that there hasn't been any issue, but I will say that it has been exhausting. And I got sick at a point last year, and it was the sort of thing that knocked me out completely for well over a month, hardcore, and then less hardcore for weeks and weeks after that. And I was really, really worried that I wasn't going to be able to meet the timelines, because again, like, this is a business and this is my first business relationship with these people. And so it's not just about the art that you're producing, although the art that you're producing better be good, but it's also about how you are to work with, right? So it's about the business relationship. Can you meet your timelines? Can you be responsive to things? And so I was very concerned that, you know, as part of this, I had, it wasn't COVID, but there was like a severe brain fog involved with it. Mm. And I had this terror that was just it, that I was going to have that forever, and that I was going to have to try to find a way to work through that when I could barely think. And so it was really, really scary. Luckily, it, you know, the sun burned it away and there's no more fog, brain or otherwise. But it was really worrying with all of these deadlines and timelines and elements in there, and really trying to make a good impression, because this is the first year we're working together. You know, if you have a normal job that first year, you can get fired for like a lot of jobs if you screw up on the first year. So, you know, I always have this in mind that it was a 3-book deal, but there are 4 members of the crew, right? So like we're hanging out for that 4th person's book that would require another contract. And I have plans beyond that. And so I don't want to screw this up. You know, we've all been sort of waiting for our time, for our turn. And it's heartbreaking if you get your turn and you're like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to do it. So when we had the initial deal, I was very much like, oh yeah, that's fine. I've got it. I've got everything. No problem at all. Because I'd been writing the other books. I got started on them. But I wasn't done with them. You know, I had them sort of roughly outlined. And that was back before I knew they were going to be officially romance. And so there was a lot of reworking there as well. So it was definitely, I was maybe dumb to be so confident, but I'm happy that I was, because I worked through it and worked it out.
And your deal was for those first 3 books.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're feeling good now?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear. Because it's scary. You're right. I think anytime we have a physical or emotional, you know, like whatever is going on, you're like, you know, can I deliver? And it's interesting you say that, because I feel like with art, it is much different than delivering when you're just kind of punching in and going through the rounds. You're doing a different level of critical thinking, is what mm-hmm. I'm saying, by writing. Nick, do you want to? I have another question, but
I have so many questions that I realize we don't have enough time. This whole journey, though, like, I knew I wanted to ask you questions, and I knew Will was going to ask questions, and Marshall, I just knew they were going to ask questions about the beginning of this cycle. But can we just highlight, like, you had a 3-book deal on your first traditionally published contract. Like, that's pretty big. And then your timeline for 3 books is typically 1 book timeline. So I think, I mean, your overconfidence, if that's what you want to call it, like, was key to success there. And I loved it. I need to know, like, how did you maintain the confidence throughout this? What kept you writing?
I think part of it is really that I have been writing since, I don't know, junior high, and I've been telling stories since before that. So I kind of can't not, You know, if I have a mind that is too silent, it gets itself in trouble. So I like to fill it up with stories of other people and other things. And so I almost take comfort, even in times that are personally trying, in coming up with other things and other worlds and other ideas. And so it's hard to not write. And so I might not be writing well, you know, all the time, but it's hard to not produce stories. You know, it's hard to not think of things that are different or wild or in other worlds or escapism, because a lot of the current entertainment right now is bleak. You know, there are a lot of, well, it's either bleak or vapid. And I say that as someone who enjoys a vapid show on occasion, right? Like, vapid can be very fun, but it's not fulfilling, right? So vapid is very entertaining, but it's junk food. It serves a purpose, but it's not doing anything for you. And the bleak stuff might be really, really, really nutritional, but you can't only eat kale salads too, right? So there has to be some sort of middle ground that has both. And if I'm not finding that enough in my other life, I'll just make it myself. And so there is a lot of middle ground stuff out there in terms of books and TV shows and movies, but I'm selfish and I like making my own too. So that it would be hard to stop doing that.
You know, I want to kind of go back to what you said earlier when you were like, you wanted to write something that only you could write. And you're like, I'm a white cisgendered woman. Like, and I don't find you boring at all every time we've talked. So I don't believe you're boring. And I just want to say, was that a worry? Like, were you thinking of, I don't want to write someone else's story for the sake of making it entertaining? Like, were there fears there, or were you really just trying to be like, what can I write that is just so me? Like, did you have those fears of trying to write the other and then not being good at it? Or, you know, because I found that remark, a lot of people feel, no matter who they are, that they're not original enough, or they might not have much to say, or what can I really talk about? So can you kind of just talk about that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's a little bit of both. That I certainly didn't want to write a story that I'm fine with writing a character who is not me, that is going through various things in their life, but I don't want to, like, for instance, I should not write a story about how hard it is to come out to your family, because I have no personal experience in that. You know, I should not be writing a story, at least I don't think that I should be writing a story about the impact of race in the workplace, because again, I don't have I might have viewed things, but I'm not the voice that necessarily should be telling that story. One thing that did come up to me as someone that grew up in Arizona that was very, very interested in the mythology of the region was I always liked telling stories that had or reading stories with the mythological figures of the various indigenous peoples of Arizona. And I even wrote a couple short stories that were involved in that, and I shelved them. And I was like, you know, I don't know, but I don't think this is for me. You know, I don't think this is appropriate for me to be telling that story. Even as someone that had, you know, I'd studied, I was doing it respectfully. I wasn't doing it in a way that was putting on a costume of it. But even then, I was like, I don't think this is mine to tell. So it was a mixture. Like, I didn't want to step on any feet by anything I did, but I also wanted to find the thing that I could do that was stepping on my own feet.
I love that. That's a good response. I think a lot of authors have those fears too. So I love how you articulated it, and you found your story. You still found your story. Yes, I see Nick going like he's pointing at his head. Marshall.
Yeah, I want to circle back to something before we get to the, because we do have to talk about the actual book here at some point. We want to go a little spoiler light-ish too, because people may not have read it, but and there's going to be a lot more stories to come, which I'm very excited about. But I want to circle back kind of to you've used the word fun a lot. And as a lover of science fiction, I'm writing a sci-fi space opera that I like to think is pretty fun as well, like with a found family kind of crew. And I know what my influences are sort of for that, but I'm just curious too, like you've read a lot, you've been writing a lot, but what you mentioned Western in the beginning, you wanted a Western feel. Like I get the vibe of this story so much, but like, as far as influences for what you've consumed, I don't know. Is there anything that is kind of that you may have watched or loved growing up or whatever that has really kind of steered you more to this being that story that is now awesome and published and now a 3-book deal and all the stuff we've said?
There were a couple of big things. One goes back to when I was a very little child. My dad would tell me stories before bed every night, and he didn't read children's books. He told me gender swapped versions of old school adult adventure stories. So he'd tell me like Tarzan, but with a female Tarzan, or he'd tell me awesome. John Carter of Mars, but with a female John Carter going through the adventures. And like, I remember as a very young child, him talking about like bones rattling in the back of a cave, and it was probably inappropriate, but it was fantastic. It was great. And so I, from a very, very, very young age, I both valued that kind of story, and I also thought that a woman's place was in that kind of story as that kind of character. Because I think we can all agree some of those, older, earlier science fiction and fantasy stories were not great for women. You know, we were there to faint in a cave or to be carried off somewhere or kidnapped by bad aliens or monsters. And there weren't that many roles for women where they took the initiative and they were powerful and they were compelling. And so the fact that he just gender swapped the characters, he changed nothing else. The characters had the same adventures. They did the same activities. They were just women. Was a really impactful thing to me without even realizing that it was, because I just expected that. So, you know, the idea of sort of an old school adventure with a woman in the lead kind of grew there. The science fiction aspect, I'd say my biggest influence, there's probably two of them that came around at about the same time. But the biggest one would be Farscape, which was just such a freaking amazing show. And I love it so, so, so deeply. It's got such weird DNA that I'm sure has pushed it. I mean, yeah, it's pushed its way into the series probably in a couple places. But that one, again, had such a great crew that worked together, such interesting bad guys. It was not afraid to be goofy, but it also wasn't afraid to be absolutely tragic at times. And so that mixture of humor along with everything else was really powerful. And the other thing that came out at around the same time was Firefly, which is the thing that I think is most commonly compared to it, because that was, even though it was very short-lived, was also very, very popular. But again, you had the funny mixed with the adventure and the sci-fi. And then, of course, there have been a lot of books that had, you know, bits and pieces of inspiration. But I think, honestly, for me, it was those two TV shows that kind of told me it could be done.
No, I definitely feel the Firefly vibe. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I love it. And just so we can kind of, I know Will and them probably have some other questions to get into the book part of it. But I think one of the things you do really well in this book that I think speaks to your influences as well is kind of the you talked about how, like, okay, sometimes women are barely characters or just there to faint or whatever, but there's moments of messiness in kind of the relationship of the main character that I love, that I think you pull off really, really well. Like, there's moments of like, I'm strong, I can do this. And it's like, oh crap, he's going to have to do this. And that sucks. But I really think, I just wanted to commend you on how well all those scenes played out. And I think the balance was really, really well done. So I just want to commend you on that. And so, can you speak to the, I guess the relationship at the center of the story a little bit? And just, or am I stepping on anybody else's question?
I would, Constance, why don't you pitch the book and tell everyone?
Yeah, okay, like, let's do that first. Yeah.
And then go to Marshall's question. Okay.
Yeah, we gotta restart.
I knew I was overstepping. Go ahead, please. Do that first.
Yeah, go ahead. All right. So my very, very short pitch for this is Calamity Jane in space with sex. My slightly longer pitch is that Calamity is a sci-fi adventure romance where Temperance, Temper for short, Reed, used to be the member of one of the 15 powerful families who rule the charted space until she was banished by her brother. She wound up on a planet scouting vessel because there aren't that many places you can go when you're banished from polite society, so you can explore new territory, basically. That's about it. She's short of money, she's desperate for work, and she has to take a job from the very, very powerful Escajeda family. And that job comes with the hook of bringing their son on board as her security expert and as their spy. She hates everything about him. She thinks he's a spoiled rich man. And he hates most everything about her because she betrayed her brother, she betrayed her own people, so he assumes that she's untrustworthy. So they get to this planet, they find out there's a lot more on the planet than meets the eye, and there's also a lot more about each other than meets the eye. And so on the planet, they find cults, volcanoes, truth serum plants, underground rivers, and there's a lot of pew-pew blaster fights and good times. And the crew is also there having a good time, being interesting. There's big found family vibes, I would say, in there. So, yeah, that would be my longer pitch for it.
I love it. Now, Marshall, go in with your question.
So I'll re-ask it. So really what I want to get to is the core, obviously, the love interest is at the core of this story. Like, I love, I guess I want to know, because as look, a lot of us out here are writing fun. We're trying to write some fun stuff, but at the same time, when you decide to focus on the romance as part of the main thrust of the story, pardon my pun, but the idea is like, what was the progression, I guess, of writing this relationship? Because I love the premise of it, but at the same time, there's a messiness to it that I think is very real and relatable. So I guess bridging between talking about the book and the process of writing the book, how did that play out?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take a little bit of a half step back from that and just talk kind of romances in general, that there's a lot of romance tropes that you go to, right? And, you know, we say this one is enemies to lovers because that's sort of the closest it can go into it. But I'm not sure that's perfectly accurate because they're not really enemies. They're just people that really don't understand each other. Or actually people that understand each other perfectly, but don't think they understand each other. And one of the romance premises that drives me crazy, it can be employed really, really well, but it drives me crazy, is the, if you just had a decent conversation, this would all be resolved. Kind of idea where everyone's keeping secrets and there's no good reason to be keeping secrets. And it does build tension, but it also builds, at least in my case, a lot of frustration on the part of the reader. Like, ah, stop it, just stop it. And I didn't want to do that. So they both have their secrets, but it's funny to say about Temper, who is generally very mature, but I wanted them to have a somewhat mature relationship that's not based on games. So I didn't want to have like a big betrayal that was a real betrayal. I wanted something that kind of felt like one to her, but not something that was actually one, if you look at it in a bigger picture. There's another thing with romance novels that a lot of people love when someone's really screwed up and there's like the groveling. People are really into like the grovel at the end with the like, oh no, I need you to take me back. And again, that can be employed really, really well, but it's not something that I personally have any, I'm not great at forgiving people. And so I don't really write characters who are great at forgiving people either. I feel like a lot of times those things get glossed over really quickly. And it's like, yeah, they did a magnificent grovel, but like, how do you believe that they've really changed, that they're really any better than that? And so I didn't want to have any of those big sort of upheavals. I wanted a relationship that progressed maybe against their will at first, that they didn't really want a relationship to progress, but it progressed kind of naturally and maybe more with a physical attraction at first than an intellectual attraction, because they weren't ready for an intellectual attraction. And when it crossed over to be more than that, it was fairly solid. You know, at the point that they decided to make it was fairly solid after that. And so that's why it may not be a romance by classic romance rules, where the romantic elements drive the plot. But I didn't want to make it all hinge on the romance, I guess. I wanted the romance to be, once they decided to have it, to feel kind of safe and healthy, I guess I'd say. So there's questioning up until they kind of decide to have it. And there's some obviously bumps in the road and that sort of thing. But I wanted something that was fairly solid when it decided to be, instead of having like a huge, you know, the Dark Night of the Soul betrayal at the end. I didn't really want to have that happen in this one.
Well, I think that plays out at the end, not to spoil it, but that gesture at the end, the fact of where the characters just are, said so much to, I mean, you know, it's a first person story, and the fact that, you know, we're there and she's like, oh no, that thing says it. Like the fact that he's there, I think it's a huge thing. I love the way you brought that together at the end. Nick, I'm sorry.
Well, I will. Do you have anything first, or am I good?
I have just a continuation on that.
Oh, go ahead.
That you mentioned it being a first person story, and yeah, that was actually a very specific decision that tied into what we were talking about earlier with the romantic elements, that a lot of romance stories are told dual perspective. So you get, mm-hmm, you know, one person's history or background, and then you get the other person's, you get all of their emotions. And I wanted to do it so that you really don't get any of his, so that it's her trying to figure it out. But much like all of us, when we are becoming romantically involved with someone, you don't know if they are on the same page that you're on. And I like first person for that, because you really do keep that. There's a little bit more of a sense of mystery than there can be when you're getting dual POVs. So I thought that was also kind of important to keep the romance going at the rate that it was going, that it was just told in Temper's perspective. So you didn't have as many of your questions answered right away.
No, I love that choice. Absolutely. And I think it lands perfectly, especially at the end. I don't know if we've lost Nick for his question. Will, do you want to go?
No, I'm good. I have a lot of questions around genre blending. And I think that's what Marshall's talking about too, right? You balance this line and you talked about it in the beginning of sci-fi and romance. And I went, oh my, your opening few chapters, I was so ready for the space adventure that I did not see the romance coming, even though the romance started everything. How, talk to me about the balance there in, and I want to mention too, like the first word that you said is the fun. You wrote something that's fun to you. You finally wrote something that's you. You're coming being a sci-fi and hard fantasy reader, you're a romance reader. Talk to me about the genre blend and kind of the craft that went into it, because I didn't know it was a romance really until I was halfway through and I was like, Will, this is a romance. He's like, yeah, duh. And I was like, crap. I did it again. Because I was full on space adventure, pew, pew, let's go. Few hot steamy scenes coming along the way. But no, like, once I realized it was a romance too, I restarted it and read it with a different lens. And so I'm curious about your genre blend there and how you mastered that.
Yeah, I guess I'd say I just tried to write it like real life, which sounds like a weird thing to say about, you know, adventures on another planet with laser gunfights and volcanoes and stuff. But I, you know, these are people that have a lot of stuff going on, right? And so they are people that are, you know, they're short of money, they're short of resources, they have a lot of pressing needs in their life. And so if it had just been really heavy lean on the romance, it would not have gone into the solution to anyone's problems. If it had just been a focus on the sci-fi, that's also an interesting book, but it doesn't, you know, fulfill everyone necessarily emotionally. So I kind of tried to see that as she's this woman that, you know, is trying to have it all, to use the old statement, and maybe not doing a great job at having it all, but she's just trying to like grasp everything she can with both hands and hold on to it as hard as she can and just make this freaking thing work. And I think that kind of, maybe when I was writing, I was grasping everything with both hands and trying to make that freaking thing work. But I think that it's really, that the character has a lot going on. And I think that all of us have a lot going on in our lives. And so, you know, even if we are meeting someone and falling in love, that's not the only thing in our life. We've still got a job that we're trying to do. We've still got other things that fulfill us. We've still got other motivations. And so I didn't want it to be that the only motivation for these people was an emotional one, but that there are other driving forces in their life. So that was, I just kind of tried to balance, like, if you were to tell a story about your day, and maybe there was a date at the end of your day, so that date is part of the story, but it's not the whole story.
No, I absolutely love that. Marshall?
No, I mean, I have questions about cults and found family and all kinds of other stuff, but since we are the cult thing, we got to come back to. So I think what we should do, since we're running to the end here, if we had one more question, then we can get into our normal last questions just to kind of round out. I think that's a good idea. So where do we want to go? What do you think?
I was going to say, Nick already kind of asked the last question.
Yeah, no, I think it was great. And your response is amazing. So maybe we just go into what do you think, Will?
I mean, I'm thinking we do a part two, to be honest, guys.
No. But my point is, and I'll cut this in at some point. We're going to have you back. I mean, obviously, when Fiasco hits, we got to do this again, because I can't wait to read that freaking book now that I've read this one. So I'm super stoked about that. But why don't we jump to our towards the end last questions, and then we'll have Constance back again, because you're awesome and we could do this all day.
Yes. As long as Constance wants to come back, I think no, I think that's a really good idea, because I think we can really like go deep dive into book one and then really start going into book two as it's being released. That would be really fun. If you have time, Constance, that would be dope.
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time complaining about how little time I had, but always for you guys.
Thank you. See? We're special. So I guess, you know, yeah, like our famous last question, like we're so famous. Well, I am. No, I'm kidding. I know, I'm so stupid. What keeps you writing?
Oh, gosh. I really just love writing. I'm obsessed with stories. And I, as a little kid, the main thing that my, you know, teachers wrote home to my family about was that I wouldn't shut up. They were more polite about that, but that was the basis of it, that I just love telling stories. I love talking and sharing, and the story could be something dumb about this weird thing I saw while I was driving today, or it could be something much deeper about, you know, a alien world and a cult on it. So it's more, how could I not just keep writing? That I have always told stories, and I think I probably always will tell stories. It's difficult to not do so.
I love that. That's perfect.
Me too.
I was gonna say, I can't thank you enough. I know you and I have been trying to coordinate since October on this. And like I think even before it launched, we were like, there's no way we can do this till February. And then January came, and we were like, we can't do it in February. Like, we have to do it at the beginning of March. So, like, it is, and for good reasons, everyone's been super busy for writing stuff. So, thanks for all the patience and getting this done. I think part two, deep dive into this would be awesome. And then kind of follow your journey a little bit, because this is super insightful for me.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
I think it's also just super wonderful to see someone that we know and that you and Nick and Marshall met in 2018, and to see you go from writing excuses like to wanting to be traditional published and to now, it's just amazing, and we're just really happy for you.
We will have you back. So that's good homework for our listeners as well. To pick up Calamity, read the damn thing before Fiasco comes out, and then and we're gonna have you back again. So thank you so much. It was awesome to see you.
Awesome to see you guys too.
And this has been Just Keep Writing, a podcast for writers, by writers, to keep you writing. You can find us at justkeepwriting.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Feel free to reach out to any of us on our social medias, and please jump in our Just Keep Writing Discord channel. Links to all of that is in the show notes. Lastly, please support our show by going to patreon.com/justkeepwriting. We offer daily writing prompts, early access to podcast episodes, and much more. Thanks for listening, and just keep writing.